to Success Systems Podcast. I'm Tom Vail, and with me is my co-host, Stephen Hurt.
And this is your blueprint for success in mindset, career, relational, and financial health. Make sure to click subscribe so that you can receive actionable and practical insight on how to achieve your goals in these areas very quickly and efficiently. And we're bringing you a six-step plan to pay down your debt quickly. I'm here today with our co-host, Tom Vail. Tom, how the heck are you today, bud?
I'm good, man. How are you doing?
I'm amazing. It's a beautiful sunny day in California, St. Paddy's Day weekend, and enjoying debt-free life. So that's an awesome part about that, too.
Yeah, absolutely, man. We're actually going to dive in kind of as to why we felt like this episode was really important. So we've released episodes based on like motivation hacks. We just finished our time management masterclass, and we kind of looked at like the portfolio of our episodes so far, and a big part of it was finances, right? Like it's the biggest thing that everyone, it's oftentimes the first and the only thing people think about during their day. And we are trying to create a life full of debt freedom and like ways that I've experienced debt freedom and current projects that I'm currently working on to become debt free. And I figure, why not share this with our listeners and maybe they can pick up a few hacks along the way.
Absolutely. So Tom, why don't you just start out by saying, you know, you've been practicing good financial habits for a long time, minus the school debt. You're really not in any other real consumer debt. Right. So tell us, you know, how has getting free from consumer debt and those things really benefited your life?
That's a great question. Yeah. Like the only debt I have, thankfully, no medical bills, no car loans, things like that, is my school debt. But before that, I had a $27,400 credit card debt that I owed, as well as an $8,000 personal loan that my like parents lent me. And then I had to just like pay the bank of mom and dad back over time.
Yep.
And that was one of the largest accomplishments of my life. Not only paying off the debt, but realizing how I got in there in a way is, I don't want to say it's an accomplishment, but my dad had this like really great quote. He said, you know, when you're done digging yourself a grave, sometimes it's nice to stop and admire the work, meaning like learn how you got there so that you never get there again.
Yeah.
And it changed my life because I felt like I went through financial boot camp. Mm. And that was like a wake up call for me. Is I was very grateful to have gone through it at such a young age. I was like 20 to 24, and I went through the trials of it. I mean, just having creditors call you. I mean, being up at night, like number crunching, figuring out how you're going to get groceries. I mean, it is horrible.
Yes.
But I've noticed that my spending habits, for the most part, remain the same outside of what I would call like that boot camp, that debt payment, like 4 and 3.5 years of my life, because it clearly separated wants versus needs, and which is something I'm always trying to like reel back in and dial in on, as well as it taught me to how to set a large goal and then how to take small steps each day to like achieve that goal. So it was
definitely,
it was a blessing in disguise, you know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And as far as, you know, my debt freedom journey, I got into a lot of debt about four years ago. I took out a loan for $25,000. I had credit cards. I bought a new car. I got a really nice apartment. I mean, I went full, like, what do you say? Like, I was up to my neck and dumb, like just dumb decisions. And so having said that, I, you know, followed a lot of Dave Ramsey's financial principles and took, you know, Dave Ramsey's information from Financial Peace University and really applied that to my life. And I was able to pay off over $50,000 in debt in 3 years, including my entire car loan, credit cards, a loan, and my PMI off my mortgage. We took that down, and I bought a house all within about a three-year period. And so what being debt-free really represents to me is the freedom to do what I want to do with my money. I don't want to have to be using the money that I earn, that I work hard for, that I spend, you know, 40 to 60 hours a week working my butt off for, to just spend on interest.
Yeah,
that is not appealing to me.
Yeah.
So for me, it's just the freedom to do what I want to do with my money. And, you know, so like this year, being able to go on a lot of vacations, being able to do a lot of generous things, and also just, you know, having the freedom to, you know, do things that I want. So that's what I want to share with our listeners today. And that's why I'm so excited to dive into these six steps so that, you know, my goal is just one person here can get a little bit closer off paying off debt. That's my goal.
Exactly. And like, that was the one thing I kind of, you know, and that's a great way of putting it is, you know, the goal of this is to kind of handhold anyone who's listening to, whether you're a seasoned budgeter or you've never created a budget or set a financial goal, at the end of this episode, you will have the ability to do either of those and with a lot of relative ease. So kind of diving into it, you've got to start somewhere. So we're going to make this very black and white. We're going to first start with your income. So Stephen, what can you tell us about our income and how to get this process started?
Definitely. Yeah. And actually, point number one in the six-step process is get crystal clear on the numbers. So you have to get absolute clarity around a few things, your income, you know, and Tom will share the others as well. So number one is, as you get crystal clear on the numbers, is you have to create a budget that relates to the goal of debt freedom. Okay, so You want to create a budget that has within it some type of monthly payment that helps you to pay off your debt. Having said that, the first thing you need to put in your budget is your income. So the vision of this podcast is to give you real practical tips. So I'll just share with you what I use for myself. I use Google Sheets, and I have a monthly budget on there that I look at every single month, and it shows every single expense that I could possibly have, as well as my income. So I put my income on the dates that it hits my account so that I know, you know, how much money I have in the beginning of the month and then how much money I have toward the end of the month. And I track my income, you know, month over month and you know, make sure that I'm really, really clear on that. So that's step one in getting clear on the numbers, is know what your income is and, you know, make sure you know the months that it there's variables. So if you're on a hourly job, there might be some months where there's less hours available or whatnot. So you need to look at that month ahead of time if you're creating your budget and say, what's my income going to be for this month?
Another big thing to think about too is like, if you still, let's say that your job is super still really variable, right? Like let's say there's your hours, the hours you work on the different shifts, like your pay goes up or down. Like let's say that you're still kind of like, man, I don't have like a salary yet, or I have a salary or whatever it may be, is look at box two on your W-2. Like after you're done with your tax, like go into last year's tax filing, look at box number two and say, okay, that was last year's income. And go as close to that as you possibly can.
Yeah, and you're not looking at the gross. Gross, you know, anytime you hear someone talk about gross income, they're just trying to puff themselves up. I mean, all that matters is the net. How much do you actually take home? So, Tom, why don't you talk about the second step of a budget and what that means?
So the second step is to look at your fixed expenses. So your fixed expenses is the bills that you have to pay. So your rent, your mortgage, your cell phone bill, any
car insurance,
Yeah, like subscriptions, if you have any, like Netflix or whatever, those are fixed, meaning the price does not change. So that's step one, is you say, all right, cool. My income is like $3,000 a month. My fixed expenses, the expenses that you need to survive, like put like Maslow's hierarchy of needs, like food, shelter, clothing, those are your fixed ones. And you'll understand quickly, like the fixed expenses that you can easily cut. Like, for example, if you have, you know, an Audible subscription, and assuming like we're in debt, right? You've got like Audible, not Facebook, excuse me, like Spotify, and you have like five or six subscriptions that you're like, whoa, I can cut like four of these out. That's extra money in your pocket, and it's another less bill to pay, man. Like,
yeah,
it's just easier that way.
So Hulu yeah, and Netflix. I mean, yeah, you're in debt, you know. Use that time to work.
Yeah, seriously, it's like, you know, you can enjoy the luxuries after you've like worked your butt off to become debt free. So definitely your income is step one. Step two is figuring out your fixed expenses. And within that step is to figure out where to cut where you can.
Yeah, and then Tom and I, let's talk real quick about the variable expenses. So there's going to be a lot of things that vary month to month, and this is really kind of like your yearly bills. So you could have things like, you know, when your homeowner's insurance is due, or your home warranty, or your car registration, or the things that happen on a month, but they're not monthly, but they happen during the year. So getting really clear on those. And ideally what you want to do is if it's January and you're stepping into February, you want to create your budget for February in advance so that you know what your costs are going to look like and everything there, because you need to determine ahead of time, you know, if there's going to be a gap there between your income and your bills. And I'll talk about that more in a second.
Exactly. Yeah. And your biggest like variable expenses are everything else that, that fluctuates, right? So your groceries, you know, I'm trying to think like your, maybe not necessarily like your gas bill, but maybe some months you drive less, you drive more, coffees, entertainment, miscellaneous, dinners out with friends, things like that. Those are your variables. So a big thing that Dave Ramsey kind of like champions is you want to give every dollar a job, right? Like
definitely.
You want to make sure like, okay.
Tell your dollars what to do is what he says, I think.
Yeah, exactly. Like don't have them tell you what to do. You tell them. So once you have this clear picture of you understand your net income each month, you know the bills that have to be paid, and then you know the other bills that are fluctuating in terms of their expenditure and their balances, that is the first step in creating a budget.
Definitely. So Tom, once they've gotten real, you know, clear on the budget, right, and what all of their normal expenses are, what should they do next?
That's a great question. So the next thing that you want to do is you want to list all of your debt. So that means credit cards, car loans, student loans, and you want to organize them based on the balance, and you also want to include the interest rate and the monthly payments that you pay for them. For me, I'm an Excel guy, put it all into Excel. Mm-hmm. So when, you know, for example, my thing is right now with student loans, I have about four sections of student loans. I know their balances, their monthly payments, their interest rates. I sent it over to my friend who works with about 12 CFOs that report to him directly. And he gave me a plan. He goes, pay this loan off first, then the next one, and then the next one. So it gives you clarity into an otherwise ambiguous nature of money. Because there's so many times where money comes in and then it goes out. You're like, where did it go? Like there's that's a weird feeling.
Yeah.
And you're like, well,
It's like Dobie has no master. It's like, it just kind of comes in one account and goes out the next.
Yeah. It's just this like free flowing ebbing thing, but yet they come with receipts. Like the breadcrumbs of your expenditures, they're called receipts.
Yeah.
So like look through it again, but yeah, definitely. So that step, list your debt and really start attacking the ones with the smallest balance. And we'll get into more about what that strategy is and what that means, but you want to list everything that you owe, student loans, cars, credit cards, the whole nine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And just, again, on a practical sense for a monthly budget, you know, you have all of your debts listed out. And then on the monthly budget, you have all of your debts that you owe that month. So you might have a credit card that has a $5,000 balance, and that month your payment is $99, right? So you add that into your monthly budget, and then you compare that to your income, and that helps you to kind of pay down your debt on a monthly basis. There's a quote that says, what gets measured gets improved. And that's what we're doing here. Just like you step on the scale each week and take a look at your weight, this is stepping on the financial scale and saying, okay, where am I at in relation to where I need to be? So actually on that point, well, you know, the next point in the budgeting process is to define the gap. So a lot of times when people list their expenses and then they list their income, there's a negative gap. So for example, you have, $5,000 in monthly bills and then you have $4,000 in income. That means you have a negative $1,000 gap that you need to take care of. Now, that's a lot of time why we don't budget, because we don't want to look at that reality and look it in the face and say, oh my gosh, how am I going to get $1,000? So having said that, define what the gap is, because the gap tells you what the next steps are in your plan. If you have a positive gap, then you can use the extra money you have to pay down debt. that makes paying down debt relatively simple. If you have a negative gap, then you need to actually increase your income, which we'll talk about in point six.
Absolutely. And honestly, and said really well. And I honestly, like, I encourage everyone to do this every month. I mean, just, you never, like,
yes.
Car registrations, like, my favorite one, Amazon Prime membership is due. You ever have that one?
Yeah,
you're like, if you have credit cards and use them, it's something where, like, their annual fees might be due. You're like, I remember in July, I owed like $175 for like my credit cards. I was like, that's a gut punch, but
dang,
you've got to budget for that accordingly. So a huge part of this whole journey, I know it's in Dave Ramsey's like plan, is you want to start with an emergency fund. So all of these, again, these are actionable steps, guys, and they, however long they take, but the fact is that you, I mean, Tony Robbins even says, if you have a goal and it's backed with like burning desire and you're able to be dynamic in terms of like, okay, I'm going along this path, but you roll with the punches, you have setbacks, mm-hmm. you have different ways of getting to the goal, you will succeed. It's not a matter of if, it's just when.
Right.
So the big one here is, let's start with what is an emergency fund. So an emergency fund is for that rainy day fund. You're driving down the road and you blow a tire,
mm-hmm.
or your engine blows up, or whatever.
Someone goes to the hospital.
Yeah. Like life happens.
You lose your job.
Yeah. Life happens. Like there's mm-hmm. like, I could walk out to my car right now and the windows could be shattered and I could owe $1,000, like whatever
right.
it is. So that is what it is. Why it's important is because it does two things. It plays defense for your debt,
mm-hmm.
meaning when you save up, you know, Dave Ramsey's plan is save $1,000. We'll talk about the amounts here, you know, a bit later. But why it's important is because it prevents you from further getting down into debt. And it, you know, that's basically what it is. It puts fences around the fortress that you're building.
And absolutely.
The amounts also change over time. So,
So point number two, starting with an emergency fund, you know, why it's important to me. Number one, I tend to make better decisions when I know I have a little bit of money in savings, right? So, you know, if like I'm thinking about a job I'm going to take or an opportunity, if I have some money in savings, I'm not so focused on the money of the opportunity. I'm focused on what that opportunity is going to get me long term. Also, you know, when an emergency comes up, you don't have to pay for it on credit card, right? Which gets you into more debt. So, you know, putting some money in savings from the get-go is actually the first really start of the plan, because you have that to kind of fall back on so that you don't have to keep getting into more debt, right? And it's like that quote that says, when you find yourself digging a hole, stop digging. That's what the emergency fund is you're stop digging that hole. So now that you can start patching it back up and get out of it.
Exactly. And again, like these amounts vary, you know, I don't like now, you know, I'm almost 30, $1,000 is like nothing. So it's like, for me, my amount is like 3 to 5,000. So
right.
you want to build that cushion up so that you don't slip into that hole and like go back into it. But when I was in high school or like in college, 1,000 was fine.
Yes.
So again, like Dave Ramsey's plan, yes, is good, that the emergency fund is incredibly important. I think everyone should have that, but I disagree with the amount. I think the amount's a little silly, but again, that's all based on where you are. If you're married with a spouse, whatever it may be, just focus on, or write this down like on like a napkin or a piece of paper, say one amount of money would cause me to feel secure,
mm-hmm.
and then make that realistic. And then go after that. But a big principle of that is how to pay yourself first. So Stephen, can you talk more about what that step looks like?
Absolutely. And real quick, if anybody hasn't heard of Dave Ramsey and you're listening to this and you're like, why do they keep referencing him? Dave Ramsey is a talk show host who speaks largely on paying down debt. So he's really the source that Tom and I think first plugged into when we wanted to get our finances better. And he offers so much free information. I'm sure he has, you know, YouTube videos and all sorts of stuff. But you know, that's why we reference him a lot. So, the point C in, you know, starting that emergency fund is building the habit of paying yourself first. So here's a little mindset shift. People who have money in savings save as soon as they get their paycheck. People who don't have money in savings wait until the end of the month and realize there's no money left from their paycheck. I mean, it's really that simple. So build the habit of paying yourself first. The minute you get a paycheck, you should divide that paycheck up instantly. So what you want to do is you want to look at the paycheck and say, how much can I put in my savings? And that's the first thing you do with your paycheck, and then you live on the rest. Because your spending will expand to the amount of money you give yourself, right? If you have $5,000 to spend, you're going to spend $5,000. If you have $3,000, you find a way to live on $3,000. So let's say a really simple example. Let's say you are making $5,000 a month and you want to save up for your emergency fund. So as soon as you get one of your paychecks, which should be, let's say, $2,500 a month, you take $100 from the top of that, put it in a savings account, and live on the $2,400. The point is, build that habit of paying yourself first. And I still do this till this day, and I've been doing this a long time. Every single time I get a paycheck, my first thing is, how much can I put in savings? How much more can I put in savings? Like, I'm always trying to build that savings account, right? So pay yourself first, I say, would point C on that. Point number three in 6 steps to paying down debt fast is begin with the debt snowball. So, Tom, why don't you talk about what the debt snowball is, and let's get into that.
Absolutely. So the debt snowball is essentially this. So if you picture a mountain and you picture a snowball rolling down the mountain, as the snowball rolls down, as your balances of debt are paid down, the snowball becomes larger, picks up a lot of momentum. And then by the time it reaches, you know, those unfortunate skiers in the lodge, like it's it's an avalanche of freedom, essentially. That's kind of like way I look at it. So here's a practical example of it. So picture that you've written down three balances of three credit cards that you owe, right? American Express, Bank of America, and Chase, the ABCs of like this example. So American Express, the balance is like $2,000 and your payment is $99, and the next one's like $10,000 and $15,000, and the payments are, you know, $200 and $300. Well, the goal of that is you want to pay down the debt with the smallest balance, so it frees up the extra monthly payment that you can send. So when the balance of $2,000 is paid, that $99 goes towards the second card, and that snowball becomes bigger. The payment, the road out of the debt freedom becomes faster because you're compounding payments, much like interest, right? Compounding interest works the exact, it's the opposite way. It's your money growing, and that's like a whole other thing. Talk to an investing bro for that one. But the way to get out of that debt, you pay off the $2,000, that frees up an extra $100 a month. That $100 goes to the next balance of like $10,000. When that $10,000 is paid, and let's say that payment was $200, now you're sending $300 towards the $15,000. And before you know it, you will be out of debt. And that's what the debt snowball is. And you've got to start with the smallest balance first.
Absolutely. That was, honestly, Tom, that was a great explanation, and I loved your analogy. And, you know, it's just as simple as this. It's you take your debts, you take the smallest debt, you pay it off, and then you take that payment and you roll it into the next debt. And it just feels so good.
It does, man.
When you start to get like positive momentum, because just like with bad habits, when you do them and then you get negative momentum, with good habits, you do them and you get positive momentum, and it starts to become a game.
Yeah, it absolutely 100. I could not have said that any better. Like, I looked at this.
That's why I said it, Tom.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
sorry, I had to get you there.
No, I walked into that one, didn't I?
Yeah,
I
you did. Yeah. You did.
Yeah.
So moving on. The next thing is, you know, now that you know what the debt snowball is, and Tom so eloquently explained that, now you set a short-term goal to pay off that first debt. So you want to get motivated for this. A lot of times when we get into debt, it's a bit of a demotivating feeling, right? It's like, oh my God, there's this mountain that I have to climb. And so, you know, how do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time, right? So take a small term goal and say, okay, if my first debt is $2,000, then I'm going to set a small term goal to pay off that $2,000. you know, depending on where you're at in life, it could be a year, could be 2 years, could be a month. Depends on what your income is like, right? What's the gap? So set that small term goal and just focus on that. And what happens is when you break it down into small term goals, when you keep hitting them, you end up accomplishing your long term goal. So that's the debt snowball, and that's how you get excited for it, is to really set those small term goals. So point number four, we're going to talk about developing good spending habits. Okay, how do you change your behavior to really spend money more wisely? So, Tom, why don't you talk about the envelope system and how you've applied that to your life?
Absolutely. So, so when I was doing Dave Ramsey's plan to get out of my credit card debt, there was this like a $30 wallet that he sold, and it was an envelope wallet.
You convinced me to buy that. Yeah. I don't know if you remember that. You might have even bought it for me.
Oh, really?
Isn't that why you're in debt?
That's how I got into debt.
Yeah.
Honestly, like that's how it was.
You're generous, but dumb.
I know. Yeah, trust me, man. I've been paying for that ever since. You know that. But it's been great. Like it's a black wallet. You open it up, and it's like, I will say, it's like kind of huge, but each.
It's a purse, okay?
Yeah, it's massive. It's a man purse for sure. But at the same time, you know, there's a area for your change. There's like each, it kind of fans out like an accordion.
Mm-hmm.
And each row is an envelope, and you give it a name. It's like you give it, you know, this is gas, this is food out, this is whatever. And what the envelope system does is this, is you take your budget that we mentioned in step one, and you put all of the variable expenses in there. Because again, fixed expenses, like they're going to come out of your account. You know what those are.
Right.
But your variable is what you can control as best as you can.
Yes.
Coffees, dinners, movies out with friends, whatever it may be. And you give each envelope a title of like the category of your budget. And then you give it an amount. And then you fund that amount. So you physically take dollars, like actual money, which is foreign nowadays because we swipe it or insert a chip and everything.
Right, right.
But there's something mental, like the mentality about having like hundreds of dollars or whatever into your account. You're like, oh my God, like when you see money leave your hand, you're like, oh my God, it's gone forever, you know?
Yeah.
But swiping is like, well, that was painless, you know?
Exactly.
So what this is like you fill in the balances with what you budget, you know, gas, groceries, what have you. And then as your transactions happening during the day, during the week, what have you, you simply reach into that funded amount for gas. You pay that out of it and say, all right, cool. There's like, I have $250 left. I filled up my tank. It's $50. And you repeat that, so on and so forth. And again, what that does is the emergency fund, it puts a fence around your budget. Now we're adding cement by doing this.
Love that.
You're building a financial fortress to do that.
And I've read research that indicates that you're likely to spend more money with a card than you are with cash, right? So like if you have a card that has a balance on it, you know, you have a debit card and you have $100 in your account and you have $100 cash, you're more likely to spend the money in the bank account faster. Right? Because again, there's no pain of watching it leave. So just real quick, how this practically looked for me as well. Again, I had like four or five envelopes, and in the envelopes was my weekly food budget and gas budget and things like that. And where I overspent a lot, Tom, and I know you can't tell this because of my rock hard abs, but was food, right? Yeah. And it was going out to eat. And that's a joke for anyone listening. So, you know, it was food. When I took the money out, it took the emotion out of making that decision to like go to a nice restaurant.
Yeah.
Because I didn't want fast food, Tom. I mean, I wanted the whole kit and caboodle.
Yeah, yeah.
I wanted hometown buffet, and I'm going out in style, son.
Yeah.
So,
You're going out swinging.
Yeah. I'm going out swinging. And that has happened. No. So anyways, that's what it looked like for me. But that helped me to defeat the habit of eating out too much at nice restaurants, was just putting the money in there and saying, oh, I only have $50. I can't afford that place.
Yeah. And like a really great like strategy in doing that is going to the, like right as for me, like when I get paid, like I go straight to the grocery store, and it kind of like mentally, it changes like, oh, I have food in my fridge. Like I can't, if I go out to eat, like I'll just.
That's smart.
Like it's the word, you know what I mean? It's like a little, it's like a dumb little hack, but it's the same thing here where I'm trying to get better at not going to like if I'm going to go out to eat, I want the frequency to drop and the amount to drop. And if I'd much rather go to like cheaper places like a Panera Bread or something like that, where they have like healthy options as well, and not go to like one big dinner. You're like, whoa, like that hurt the wallet, you know?
Yep.
So, but yeah, that envelope system, guys, I'm telling you, it may seem archaic, but it works. I mean, there's no other way of doing it.
Don't think of it as a long-term habit. Yeah. It's just building that habit of spending wisely. And then once you do from there, then you can, you know, you don't have to keep that your whole life.
Exactly. And that goes to our next, you know, sub point here on point four of developing good spending habits is trying your best to live below your means. So I think Dave Ramsey's amount, and correct me if I'm wrong, is 25 to 30% of your net pay should be dedicated towards housing, right? I think those are the amounts. So take your net income, and then you multiply it by, let's meet in the middle, 25%. That amount is what you should be spending a month on housing. Now, places like Los Angeles, San Diego, San Francisco, and also Brooklyn, the average is 54%. It's like, it kills you. It kills you. It's really painful. So for me, like as a personal anecdotal event, what I'm trying to do is I currently live in Marina Del Rey with two other roommates, and I'm still spending 35% of my budget. I'm 10% over. And as someone who has student loan debt, I'm trying to send that 10% elsewhere. You know, I can't be renting. I need to rent and also send that extra money to my debt because I have a snowball plan in place for my school loans. So get creative, like rent a room in someone's house, go on Craigslist, like figure it out, like do Airbnb. I know some people that do Airbnb month to month, like they get really creative. So living below your means, also taking a glance at, but the only way that you know how to do that is by having a budget in place, like right from the start.
Yep.
So living below your means is basically looking at the areas of where you can cut and sticking to them. For me, the two levers that you can pull to live below your means is you either make more money, which kind of offsets, you know, the expenditure part, or the other lever is you decrease your expenses. So look at those areas where you can really drop quickly to make the fastest, largest change. So my rent right now, let's call it $1,400. If I pay $1,000, it's an extra $400 a month. So I encourage everyone listening to this is to scan through your budget and find out where you can cut and stick to it.
Yeah. And I'll just say for the, you know, even though I make what I feel like is a good income for Orange County, I don't drive that nice of a car.
It gets you from A to B.
My car is paid off. And I know a lot of people who have really nice cars, mm-hmm. and they make a lot less. And, you know, and that's okay. You know, no harm, no foul. But when it comes to paying down debt, you know, you might be selling the BMW. It might be dressing less nice. You know, it's just living below your means.
Exactly.
Being humble.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, you know, there's like that. What's that book, The Millionaire Next Door? And mm-hmm. it's one neighbor has like a BMW or a Mercedes and doesn't have anything in savings, but the other couple wears like Wrangler jeans and t-shirts, has a Camry, but they're millionaires.
Yeah.
So it's like highlighting that is, you know, the understanding where you place value. You know, I worked for a guy who made like $350,000 like a year. He was a financial advisor. He drove a Kia. And I mm-hmm. went, how come you don't drive like, I don't know, an Aston Martin or whatever? He goes, cars are not a big place where I place my value. And I went, well, where do you place your value? He's like retiring well. And I was like, okay, well, that's a big deal.
Imagine that.
So it's like cars, like, yeah, they look cool, but you know, Stevens Pinto and you know, my Ford.
My skateboard.
Yeah, yeah. They do the same thing. They get you from point A to point B and as safe as humanly possible.
So yeah, and fast forwarding into negotiating, right? So that's the third step of developing good spending habits. So, you know, if you do buy certain things, you want to negotiate. You want to get the best deal possible. So I'm going to give you two or three principles to become a really, really good negotiator. Now, I'm a real estate agent. I've been doing this for 9.5 years. And literally, you know, at least 3 to 4 times a day, I'm negotiating with someone, whether it's another agent on a transaction, a buyer, a seller, a client. You know, there's negotiations happening all the time. So I really learned some principles about how to spend money wisely and save money when buying stuff. The first step in negotiating is he or she who has the knowledge has the power. When you show up to buy something, let's say you're buying a car, the more research you do, the more you've checked out other comparable cars, brands, you know everything about that, the more confident you sound. And sometimes a negotiation is won by your confidence. So the more you know, the more you can show up with confidence and the better of a negotiator you are. The second subpoint in negotiating would be seek to understand what the variables are in the other person's mind and how they weigh them. Okay, understand what's important to the other person and how they weigh the variables. For example, you might be, again, negotiating with someone to buy a car. Now, you want to start by asking them, you know, what's important to you about selling it, right? You know, how did you arrive at that price? Would you take any, you know, would you consider taking less? And find out how they weigh, you know, what variables on their mind and how they weigh it. You might hear a certain seller say, well, listen, I just want to get it sold fast. You know, and then you might hear someone say, well, I just want the most amount of money. Some sellers of cars want the cash now because they want to spend it on something else. So if I know that, then I know that it's actually a win for that person if I, you know, if I spend a little bit less, but I give them the cash now, right? So so find out what's on the other person's mind, right? The third thing is, you know, the answer is always no if you don't ask. So a lot of times you will be tempted not to ask for a discount, but everything is negotiable. And sometimes just asking for a discount, you would be surprised. I would say conservatively 30 to 40% of the time, if I ask for a discount, people just say yes, right? It's like I go to the store and I love doing this. In certain stores, I'll say, do you have any coupons? Right? Or do you have any sales going on? And they're like, yeah, by the way, you know what? Here, I've got a 15% off. Right?
So like out of random, that happens all the time?
Wow. Yeah. Yeah.
And it's a habit I've never done.
Yeah. And I mean, mostly I steal stuff. So it's like, I don't apply it all. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah. He's wearing Gucci loafers. They're nice.
Check these out. Yeah. No, but seriously, that, you know, so that those are three little quick things that you can do to negotiate. What I would recommend on that point is read some books on it, learn about it, and negotiating should become part of your spending habits. But there's bad negotiation and there's good negotiation. Bad negotiation is you're trying to rip people off. Good negotiation is you're trying to understand where they're coming from and then explaining where you're coming from and seeing if there's a win-win, a spot in the middle where you can both win. Okay. So having said that, let's jump to point number five, which is create accountability around your plan. So this is where you get some accountability for your plan to pay off debt. So really simple, you want to find someone in your life who cares about your goal and who wants to help you, and you want to use what is called the 411 check-in method. Okay, this is really simple. I learned this through my company, Keller Williams Real Estate, and it's basically 1 year, 1 month, and 4 weeks. So 411. So you have a yearly goal, you have a monthly goal, that's the one, and then you have a four-week goal, a four-week kind of plan and goal, right? So let's say your goal is to pay off $12,000 of debt in a year. Then your monthly goal is to pay off $1,000 of debt, and your weekly goal is to pay off $250 debt, right? So you take the goals, you break it down into weekly, and then you list some action items that you can do to hit the weekly goal. So, okay, my weekly goal is 250. So here's 3 to 5 things that I'm going to do this week to achieve the goal. So each week you schedule an accountability meeting with someone else and you check in with them and they ask you things like, okay, your goal was to do these 5 steps. Did you complete them? Yes or no? And then you report to them. You know what? I completed step 1, step 2, and step 3. I didn't do step 4, but I did do step 5. Okay, great. So we're going to add step 4 to next week's plan.
Exactly.
Right? Because the only way to hit a goal is if you do the activities necessary to achieve the goal. And if you get behind on the activities, you have to add them to the next week.
100%. And like a big part of like the accountability piece is when I was going through my my credit card debt and they consolidated all of my credit card debt. It took a hit on my credit report. I mean, it was not pretty. It was not my finest hour.
Right. Right.
And, but I remember if the timing of this phone call, like changed my attitude towards it. And the individual who, his name is Tim Enos, and he works at the Consumer Credit Counseling of Southern Orange County. And they basically, they take all your credit card debt and they consolidate it with like little to no interest, so you get out of debt that much faster. But instead of you declaring bankruptcy, which stays on your, I mean, that just ruins you, you know, for 7 years. This one is more like a slap on the wrist if your balances are pretty reasonable. And when I was 6 months into paying this, I mean, it's brutal. You're like, man, like I have to pay this debt. Like this sucks. Like I hate it. But on the 6 month mark, I got a phone call. I was in college. I was at Cal State Fullerton. It was, must've been 103 degrees. I was just like frustrated, stressed out, like going to class. And I get this call and it's from Tim, who helped consolidate my debt. And he said, hey, you've just paid your 6 month payment. I just want to encourage you to keep going. Like eventually you will be out of this debt. Mm. And I almost like broke down in tears in the parking lot. I was a pathetic mess, but it was so encouraging. And the accountability system is aimed not to shame or judge.
Yeah.
It's aimed to encourage and to motivate. So definitely. A lot of people, they'll see the word accountability and it's like a curse word. It's like, grow up. Like that's not the case. It is supposed to encourage you, because that person that's keeping you accountable wants to see you hit your goal, whether it's financial or otherwise.
Definitely. Great point, Tom. And thank you for sharing that. That's huge. So point number six, and the last point in paying down debt fast, is increase your income. Now, this point was really, really important to me because I think that nobody talks about it. When it comes to paying down debt, people tend to talk about your spending habits, but nobody tends to talk about, you know, increasing your income. And, you know, I think the reality is like if you live in a place like we live in Orange County, California, or San Diego, or New York, or, you know, these expensive places, unless you are making more money, you're way behind the curve. Because prices, home prices go up 3 to 5% a year. Groceries grow up, gas goes up, everything goes up. So if you're just standing still, you're actually getting behind. And that's what most people don't realize, is that inflation will beat you if you don't beat it. Okay? So there's two things you can do. Number one is you can get a side hustle. Well, there's a lot of things you can do, but there's two things we put here. Number one is a side hustle. So Tom, why don't you talk about a few little part-time jobs that people can get to, you know, fund their debt pay down?
Absolutely. So if you've got the time and you can make some extra bucks along the way, you know, we've given you five options here. First one is WAG. So I'm just going to list them all really quick. WAG, Uber, Lyft, Postmates, TaskRabbit. We're going to go through each one quickly. WAG is basically a dog walking service. So there are, I don't even know how many, like, I don't know, thousands, tens of thousands of dogs, or just wherever you may be living, is there's dogs available to be walked. You know, these owners go to work, their dog's at home all day, but they need to be walked, right? WAG fills in that service, and they being the owner of the dog, pay you. WAG takes a portion of it, and you walk the dog, you get some sunshine. And you can actually build up kind of like what I would call like a paper route, but it's like made of fur kind of thing. So you have the ability to like walk dogs, get some exercise, and make some money along the way.
So real quick side note. I just got back from an event we did as a real estate team. Every year we have an event called Doggy Photo Day.
No.
So check this out, because I'm a dog lover. I mean, put a dog in front of me and I just melt. Yeah. And so we basically pay for this neighborhood when the people show up with their dogs, we pay for a free professional photo for them.
Nice.
Right? And so we market to the community and we sell homes there. But, you know, I mean, we're in 2019 and you can make money walking dogs.
It's insane.
I mean, come on. Like, yeah. How much easier could they make? It's like God hand-delivered a job and was like, you get to walk dogs.
Yeah. Like, and honestly, like, I encourage anyone, like, and I mean this, like, not really tongue-in-cheek, but at the same time, like, maybe a little bit. But if you're looking to, like, drop weight and debt, do WAG.
There you
go. Seriously, like, dude, like, you're outside. Like, you're outside. You can listen to an audiobook. You're feeding your brain. You're feeding your wallet. And you're, like, feeding your waistline. Like, you're good. Like, you're done.
That's awesome.
So WAG, I definitely, like, I know it sounds silly, but it's extra dollars and who cares. So the next one is Uber and Lyft. Obviously, everyone, I'm assuming that our audience has used this ride-sharing program at some point. For those of you who haven't, it's an app of drivers that are certified. They have a background check. They pick you up, much like a cab service or a driving service, and they get you to where you need to be, and you can make some extra dollars along the way. I personally have driven for both for just only a month's time, just to make some ends meet, and it does work. It's awesome. You always have people ringing you. The conversations are cool. And, you know, people, it's a service that's always in demand. Postmates, again, for people who don't know what this is, picture Uber, but for food. So it's basically, I'm hungry. These restaurants have what I like. They also have delivery options available on the Postmates app. And you, and within, you know, an hour or less, someone drops off your meal. And Postmates, you get a percentage of like the tip as well as the balance. So you get some credit as well. And finally, the service TaskRabbit we've talked about before. It's basically an online forum. It has a great app of a multitude of projects. Handyman, you help people move. You know, you can help an elderly woman like install like a door, like her door frame is off. You can help her like screw it back in. Like there's a multitude of things. There's personal assistant. There's getting someone's groceries. My favorite one, you can pay someone to stand in line for you, like at an event. How crazy is that? So I love that.
That is genius.
Yeah. So like, let's say that there's like, let's say you're going to like a Laker game and the line is out the, like whatever, like in line for a concert. You pay someone like 10 bucks an hour and they stand in line. They hold like your name, like for you, and then you meet them in line and then they leave. And it's the truth. Like it's an awesome service. So, but that person though just made, I don't know, 20 bucks.
Can standing. I just pay you to stare into my eyes for the next hour?
Oh yeah. Honestly, yeah. I charged 50 bucks per blink, but that is it. That's right there, guys. That's five ways to have some extra money right there. I mean, your snowball just became a lot bigger.
And I was at a point where I was paying off my debt and I needed some extra money if I was going to get ahead on my debt. And I talked to a few of my mentors who, you know, a few of them are pretty, they're very well off financially, let's put it that way. And one of them said, go deliver pizza. He's like, you need to make money. There's no job beneath you. There's no job above you. Like you need to make money today. So he's like, if I were you, I don't care how much money I have. I'll go to Pizza Hut and I'll deliver pizza. And you know, literally, that's a core part of my work ethic. Is like I will do any job if I need the money, proudly, with excellence, and happily. So, having said that, let's move to the last point or the last sub point of increase your income is get a raise from your current employer. So, if you don't know how to get a raise already, or if you've never gotten a raise before, these should be some really simple actionable items. So number one, you have to really understand that companies don't pay people more money for longevity. They don't pay you more money just for how long you work there. A lot of people have this myth in their mind that I've been here 5 years, I deserve a raise. Companies, watch this, they're there for a profit. They will pay people more money who make them more money. So what you have to do is you have to go to your boss and say, listen, I really want to grow. I really want to better myself and better the company. What can I do to make the company more money? What can I do to add value to my position? How can I do my job more efficiently? Right? So you go to your employer and you ask them, you know, listen, this is the amount of income I'd like to make within the next year, 2 years, 3 years. What can I do within the company that would add enough profit to help get that kind of raise, right? And you might be thinking of that and you might say, well, that's bold. I don't know if I could do that. You might just say, hey, what are some things that I can do to make the company more money? And you might not, you know, tell them you want a raise right away, right? So find out what your employer values. Then step number two, make a strategic and measurable plan to implement whatever it is that they value. So let's say you're a salesperson and your employer says, well, you know, the most important thing to us is to get 50 more of these accounts each year. Like these are the key accounts. These are the ones we want to get. So literally put like a tracker on your desk of like 0 to 50, a big tracker, and, you know, target those kind of people in each week or, you know, every 2 weeks, see if you can bring in an additional key account. Right. And then you track it and you're measuring it as you go so that when you go to ask for your raise, you can say, look, I brought in these additional 50 accounts and track how much profit comes from them. Wow. That's the key because people aren't influenced by your emotions. They're influenced by math when it comes to raise. I mean, that's bottom line. So, you know, say, okay, I brought in these 50 accounts And of these 50, there were $250,000 gross dollars that went to the company. Now, if you take the costs involved in those sales and the things that we did to market to them, that's an additional $175,000 net profit that I brought to the company. So that's why I'm asking for, you know, X amount raise, right? General rule I've heard is asking about a 3-5% raise per year. Okay, so if you do something like that, you know, the goal should be to get a 3-5% raise a year or more, right? Don't limit yourself. If you bring in a lot of extra money, you can do a lot more. So you find out what your employer wants, you create a measurable plan and execute and get what your employer wants. And then here's three. This one's the gold right here. You cast a vision for what you're going to do in the next year. So you tell your employer, you know, here's what I've accomplished, here's what I've done, here's the results, here's the profit, but I'm just getting started, baby. Here's what's happening next year. In the next year, I plan to bring on 100 more accounts, which will bring the company $350,000 additional profit, which will do this, which will open it up to, hire more employees, do this, do that. And this is how it will benefit you, right? Go ahead, Tom.
It also creates, and I couldn't have explained that any better, is this also since you've got your raise, I've noticed that it's changed how you've approached your work. Is it's much more strategic, and you have to the only person that you're beating is yourself, because you asked for the raise, you got it, now you have to prove it. Mm-hmm. And it also is a great way to kind of shake up your current situation. And it gives it a spotlight, because don't forget, employment is a two-way street, they send you an offer letter, you have to accept it. So if you're at your current place of work, and, even Brian Tracy said, he's like, well, I would finish my work and then I would go to my boss and say, what else do you have for me? And he would give him another project, he would complete it, and what would it be? And he built this reputation of just, he would finish his work, go above and beyond the scope of his position, get extra work done, and then on top of that was rewarded handsomely financially. But heed my warning, if you're at an employer where they're like, oh, I've got nothing for you, bud, sorry, look elsewhere.
Yeah.
Period. Because if you're at a place where you're not growing, or they're not giving you a goal to shoot for to bring the company money, which would then bring you money, dude, they are, go on LinkedIn and figure it out. There's different places to go. So that is a great point that you made. And it's something where if you've been in the same position, you're making the same money year in and year out, and there's no raise, use that advice that Steven just gave to shake things up, man. Shake it up. Just go in there and say, look, I want to be in, I think there's people in that work at Chipotle that this kid is 20. I think he was 24, and he's the operator of a Chipotle, and he makes well into six figures, and he's younger than me. I'm like, that's incredible. But he started as a line cook. Mm-hmm. That's where you start. You press tortillas. Now you run the ship. It's amazing. So that model, much like Chick-fil-A, they run a great ship. But that employee asked, he showed initiative, and he accomplished what he set out to do.
Yeah. And I mean, I don't know what it's like in other countries, right?
Right.
But that's the beauty of America, is that our job market here in 2019, and praise God, right? We don't know how long it's going to be this good.
Yeah, jobs were up this year.
It's the best it's ever been. Yeah. So if your current employer is not growth-minded and that growth isn't there, develop your skills, develop yourself, and find someone, who will reward you for your hard work. So with that being said, guys, these are the six steps that you can use to pay down debt quickly. I want to thank you so much for listening to this episode and invite you to do two quick things that would mean the world to us. If you're listening to this, number one, please subscribe so that you can receive our actionable and practical tips each week. And number two, leave us a review specifically on Apple Podcasts. Would really mean a great deal to us. Click the 5-star rating and drop a line about what you liked about this episode. And specifically, did it help you pay down debt? Thanks again for listening, guys, and have a great day.